Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Was that a couple of raindrops? Just a few that were on the way in. Wouldn't mind if there were a few more, but hope everybody doing well here on this Thursday afternoon. It is Bill and Dan here in the studio. Our usual third, Justin Ferguson, I believe will be checking in with us on the phone at some point here this afternoon. We've got Drew at the controls as usual, and we'd love for you to join in as well. We have so much audio today. We had the opportunity to sit down with the Auburn offensive assistant coaches, and got some lengthy time with them. I've got about 16-17 minutes with Kent Austin. I got close to 15 minutes with Jake Thornton. I know you were over there with Ben Agamawa and Marcus Davis. Derek Nix was also there. So some really interesting things. And again, the same tone continues. I mean, look, nothing's proven yet. They haven't gotten out there and gone, you know, full scrimmage mode or anything like that. But everyone we've talked to continues to really be very positive, upbeat about the situation where this team is right now as they get ready for the season in just over 3 weeks.
And my opinion of the the win-loss record of the team hasn't changed dramatically in the last week and a half or so. I still look at it as a team that, you know, there are two games that feel like real long shots, and then a bunch of games that, you know, we'll decide if you go 6-6 or 10-2. And Auburn feels like they could be in virtually all of those games.
I agree.
Like, well, now we'll see, but like Auburn could be in, and so that, and it's which I guess was kind of the story last year, although you got the sense that to get to 10-2 last year, Auburn was going to have to really punch above their weight.
Oh, yeah.
In games like Ole Miss and Georgia and Alabama, which were close games, but ultimately Auburn didn't have enough to beat those teams last year at home. And while they've improved both the starting lineup and the depth situation, you know, I still think that Auburn could be a hair below the championship caliber teams in the conference, but we don't know. Like, I mean, that's where, you know, we'll, you know, again, ask me after Oklahoma, but in the meantime, you know, that there are a couple of trends that have emerged talking to all of these players and all of these coaches over the last week and a half. You keep mentioning that comfort, you know, comes up, the notion, especially compared to last year when you think
right.
about how everyone was adjusting to Auburn. You know, how many of those coaches and players had just arrived in the previous 6 months and were now adjusting to life there in Auburn. You know, a lot of those guys are back for another year and things have settled down. And that's where I feel like maybe comfort might be the wrong way to describe it, because it gives people the impression.
It's not really comfort. It's they're
I think they've settled down.
They're at ease with, or they're comfortable, and comfort are a little different. They're comfortable with the people around them, the people either coaching them or playing for them. They just feel I think they know each other better.
Everybody knows
You know, who they're playing with, what to expect from everyone else.
A lot of the anxiety related to unfamiliarity seems to be gone for these coaches and a lot of these players. And that could lead to a better team, a team that's more in position to win games in the fourth quarter when it goes into. Because last year, for the most part, I mean, I think Cal would be the exception. But last year when Auburn went into the fourth quarter and these games were still in the balance, you know, Auburn lost most of those games. So that's where you would hope that Auburn can be – that's where you would think depth would be able to help you, right? Is that, you know, if you fade in the fourth quarter, it's usually an indictment of your – if you're in the game until the fourth quarter, it's not because you didn't have the talent in your starting lineup, because your talent in the starting lineup – kept you in the game for three quarters. Usually, it's that you didn't have enough depth and you had to overuse.
It's a combination, because it also can be you're not used to winning.
Maybe.
Because if you've had a couple of years where you have lost ball games and you just don't believe and just feel like we're going to win, then you're probably not. I remember
last year's roster though, Bill. I know wasn't used to anything.
No, I know that. But I mean, Auburn, you know, the players who were holdovers. Mm-hmm. Had not been winning those ball games in the fourth quarter. But that reminds me, and man, I again, as we head to football season, we really miss Coach Dye. I remember Coach Dye years ago talking about turning a program around. He said, first, you're going to lose close, but you've got to be competing, and you're probably going to lose close. Then,
which Auburn did in most of their games last year.
Then the next step is you win close, and then hopefully the next step is you win big. So, I mean, they've got the win close. They've got the lose close. You know, they did that a couple of times last year. I mean, came very close. But yes, now to make that next step is to win those fourth quarters, and you're absolutely right. Having the kind of depth that it appears Auburn has this year as compared to a year ago should be a tremendous help in the fourth quarter.
I would still understand completely if somebody looked at both rosters and considered where the games are going to be played and said, you know what, you're still probably a three-touchdown underdog in Athens right now.
You're a double-digit underdog in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, and 14-plus is what I would probably say, you know, in Tuscaloosa right now. Every other game on the schedule, including the game in Columbia, Missouri, against that preseason top 15 Missouri team. Every other game on the schedule feels like a game where, you know, right now I think Auburn's got a puncher's chance or better.
I don't think Auburn is overwhelmed talent-wise against other teams on the schedule.
No, there were times last year when it felt like A&M was overwhelming Auburn. But I think that was more about Auburn melting down times in that game than necessarily A&M actually having a team that was multiple touchdowns better than Auburn. And we'll see, because a lot's different from that A&M team to this one, and the game is in Auburn this year. I mean, that's, you know, those A&M and Oklahoma games. I mean, if you told me, Bill, if you told me with absolute certainty Auburn's record against A&M and Oklahoma, I feel like I would have a pretty decent shot at being able to tell you what kind of season we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you told me, you know, if you're winning one of those two games, I think you got a shot at a very, you know, improving on last year's win-loss record for sure. And maybe having a very good season. If you told me Auburn won both of them, you know, suddenly I start to ask, like, well, did they lose three? I mean, if you guaranteed me victory against Oklahoma and A&M, I would say 9-3, 10-2 is absolutely on the table, right? Like if you told me Auburn's going 2-0 against Oklahoma and Texas A&M, I would start to say, well, now, I mean, you'd need to drop 8-4 would require you at that point to drop all four of the road games. And then you start talking like, well, if you win one of the road games, you could go 9-3. You win two of the road. It's like Price is Right, right? Like, well, dude, you know, ladies, do we win one of the four road games? And, you know, the car honks or something. So I think that's, I mean, it's again, the general feeling of how we've, you know, what we've gotten to see the last couple of weeks, I think there have been bright spots. How about this? Are there names that come to mind, Bill, as you recently restructured the Bill Cameron depth chart? Are there names of players who their playing time in your mind, their picture, you know, their level of importance to this team has changed in the last week and a half, as far as you didn't realize they were going to be either in the first team already or being utilized as much as they are on either side of the ball?
Probably. I've been more impressed by. I didn't know what to expect from the newcomers, new transfers on the defensive front.
Okay.
I think both those guys. I think Isaiah Rakes is really pushing. Philip Bleedy sounds like he is as well. I think
if Bleedy starts the opener, he would be an excellent choice because
I
don't know if I necessarily had Auburn. You know, I don't know if I had him pegged as a start the opener.
Yeah, I still don't have him pegged as a starter, but I think all those guys there up front defensively. I think this defensive line has a chance to be markedly better than I thought, and than a lot of people thought heading into the preseason practice.
How about Brandon Frazier? As an answer to that category, I think he's somebody who looks like he could be playing. I mean, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd have thought, well, Rivaldo's going to play way more than everybody else at tight end. And then you've also got Luke Deal, and you've also got Brandon, and you've also got Micah, and you've got the new guys, you know, who could factor in.
I thought Brandon last year showed a little down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn just hadn't been utilized very much. He's always had soft hands for such a big guy. And he's sort of that cross, if you will, in between Rivaldo and Luke because he's a big guy who also catches the ball well. Not that Luke doesn't catch it well, but he's not as nimble maybe. He's got good hands, but I think of the other two guys as just better receivers at being able to run routes and get open.
Frazier more of an open field threat, more of a downfield threat, a bigger target than Luke Deal as well. Though Luke's not undersized for the position or anything like that. But no, I think that's a cool story. And Ben Igamawa talked about that a little bit, where he mentioned that one of the things he really. If we get a chance to play it, he'll phrase it better than I can, Bill. But he says one of the things that he really enjoys about the job is a story like, you had a player who had a really rough couple of years and stuck it out, and now they could be playing meaningful snaps on a really good team before their college football career is over. And that would be like, the thought that's where you get out of Brandon Frazier, that'd be huge.
All right. Tell you what, we'll get to our first break. Have we figured out when we're okay? Because I mean, we've got a lot of audio. I'd like to run some of it if we get a chance. But we'd love to hear from Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer as well. Love to hear from you, and you can get in touch with us by calling the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Rob from University Ace Hardware.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. We will check in with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer at some point here this afternoon. Again, today we had a chance to talk with Auburn offensive assistants, and we'll let you hear some of that. We also have quite a few player interviews from the past few days. Tomorrow morning, we'll talk with Hugh Freeze before Saturday's practice, which will be open to the media. So it's great. We'll be able to watch practice Saturday along with, I think, the On to Victory members.
What's your
before fan day?
What's your expectation of, do you think they're scrimmaging tomorrow and then putting on a show for the fans Saturday? Or
yes.
Do you think we're going to get some scrimmage?
No, I don't. I think maybe we'll get some 11-on-11. But I think it'll be more situational. I don't think there's going to be full scrimmaging for that many eyes on Saturday. I'd be surprised. I'd be pleased, but I'd be surprised.
Right. I'm thinking you're right. I would imagine that. And maybe would you expect a very intense practice tomorrow before Hugh Freeze,
probably,
and maybe a scrimmage.
Yeah, I think
like atmosphere.
It could be, and then Saturday you sort of go in and try to learn from what happened on Friday. You know, one of those sort of a teaching practice from what happened. Again, I don't know that that's the case. It just seems to make sense that if there's going to be, you know, 1,000 or more people there in the stands on Saturday, that they wouldn't really open it up and scrimmage as much. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll see. But anyway, it's still good to be able to watch some of the scrimmage on Saturday. I'm glad it's fairly early for a couple of reasons. One, it's awfully hot by the afternoon, and secondly, I'd forgotten till my wife reminded me. She goes, "We got another concert Saturday, don't we?" And it's like, "Oh, that's yeah, I'd forgotten about that."
Oh, who are you seeing on?
It's America this time.
Oh, you're seeing America. Uh-huh. I saw America as part of, I want to say it was New Year's Eve festivities in the city of Boston.
Huh.
25 or 30 years ago, with part of a family trip, and you know they were just doing an outdoor set, as you know, as part of the, and they're very, very good. You know, Adventure Highway, Horse with No Name.
They've got a bunch. It's crazy. Well, when we were on vacation down in Pensacola, one of the places we went to had live music, and there was a guy, and that's all he was playing. I had just we hadn't had the tickets to see America for very long. And we go in, and it's like, oh, that's pretty interesting. We'll probably hear that. And then he went on and on and on. And it was like he played nothing but America music. It was really good.
Yeah.
Just a fellow with his guitar. And, man, I mean, he really was good at covering all the America songs. And when it was over, he came walking by, and I said, man, that was really good. We enjoyed that, and told him we were going to see America. And he goes, well, you know, Dewey – he said, I've sat in with them before. That's one of the reasons I play, because he goes, I know their music because I've sat in and been one of their guitarists and backup singers on a couple of tours. He goes, so if you see them, let them know that, you know, apparently he'd had some health problems or something.
He said,
if you see him, let him know that I'm available again. It's like, I'm probably not going to see him. I mean, we got decent seats, but
well, bring, you know, a sign. Bring a sign that says call Dewey or whatever, you know, call this guy. No, that's very cool.
Yeah, so
have you ever seen America?
No,
before?
I hadn't seen them.
Yeah, that'll be neat. Cross that one off. Again, it's very, very sad about Aerosmith. You know, that would have been a cool show, and that's a legendary,
sure, would have been
legendary live act. It's probably not going to not going to see them. Have you seen? By the way, Drew, I sent you the Ken Austin thing. Have you seen? I believe it's like Eagle Sphere prices are
I figured they would be astronomically high. I mean, because their last tour, and I saw them the time before, you know, since Ville and Glenn Frey's son had joined the band, we saw them, and those were rather pricey. But this last tour, they've gotten sky high, and yeah, I just imagined that they're in the Sphere that probably. You know, I was thinking $500 range, something like that. What are they?
I mean, let me pull up a random date using StubHub here, and if you let me see here, I could probably get you in the weekend of September 20. Which one is the Auburn? What's Auburn's bye week? Is that the
weekend
week after
October 12th?
Okay, so the weekend of the 12th. So let's see what I can do for you on the 12th. So if you wanted to see the Eagles at the Sphere that Saturday. I could probably get you in the ballpark of $450 a piece.
I was thinking probably somewhere.
Now one of the cool things is I'm told just about any seat in the Sphere
is unbelievable.
I know somebody who saw the Dead and Company saw them in you know the family of Grateful Dead.
Who was it? Molt saw.
Did he see Fish or did he see Dead and Company?
May have been Dead and Company.
Okay, so yeah, no, I mean that there are that's the John Mayer led remnants of the Grateful Dead playing. They have a term, by the way. I'd never heard this before. So when they play a song, and I guess other musical acts use this too, Bill, and you can in your concert going, you can chart this. When a band plays a song live that they haven't played live in a long time, it's called a breakout. That's what they go. The song broke out of jail or something. You know what I mean? So when the, especially bands that have like a big discography of stuff to choose from, like Dead and Company, Bob Dylan fans chart
Stones.
His breakouts, the Stones for sure. I mean, they're so even Taylor Swift to an extent because put out, you know, 10
when you have that many songs to choose from.
Yeah, like so that's a cool thing to chart. So I don't know, you'd probably have to be aware of like what America usually plays.
I would expect to be familiar with most of their stuff, but looking forward to that Saturday as well. So Saturday, and you know, Auburn's into their second week of practice now. They had today off from practice. Again, we spent some time with the offensive coaches. If we want to run, and have we heard from Justin yet?
No.
Okay. I didn't want to start running something and Justin and say, okay, now's the only opportunity that I have.
I get the feeling Justin will be available in the second hour.
Okay.
So I think we're okay. If you want to run a little Ken Austin.
Kathy's retirement party starts at 5.
It's not a surprise party, right?
No. Okay, it's going 5 to 8. It's one of those drop-in.
We didn't just wreck the surprise there. I'd love to run Marcus Davis. Really cool stuff about the receivers.
I'm sure. Brandon, and everybody wants to hear about the young receivers.
We didn't. We didn't run Frazier yesterday because we had Andy and JC in the house. I mean, Brandon Frazier was great. Like he talked about, you know, whether it's growth in that room or what he's seen out of Peyton Thorne.
Did we run Jason Jones yesterday?
I'm not sure we ran any audio yesterday.
Jason Jones is great because he talks about a lot of the young guys.
I'm pretty sure
because
yesterday we had Jason and Andy. Yeah. I don't think we. We've got
some really good audio that we can run. We can get to. Definitely want to hear Ken Austin. We'll do that after the bottom of the hour. But right now, let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Yellowhammer is up first. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, I just was going to jump on that discussion about depth. I have. Over the course of my life, done a lot of outdoor construction type of stuff.
Right.
And I have noticed that in this kind of heat, after about 4 or 5 hours, I'm just gone. My energy level just goes to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true when I was 20. I mean, it's just something that hits really hard in this kind of weather. And so with college football, that first half of the season, that's the operative thing. If you don't have the depth to get through that heat, you're not going to win.
Yeah, I mean, now, and then later in the season, I mean, you're playing against very physical teams. The weather might be a little cooler, but it's still so beneficial to have that depth.
Oh, yeah, the fourth quarter, it's like a boxing match. You know, one guy is just sort of gauging things, being patient, waiting for the opportunity to see if the other guy is starting to flag, and then he can attack at that point. And that's kind of what Bryant used to do back when he had so much depth.
Oh, yeah.
The NCAA finally said, you can't have all those players.
That's right, because there didn't used to be scholarship limitations, right?
Right. Yeah, and because they were a brand name, they would attract a lot of really good players, and they would just stack up good players that maybe never even saw the field, but they always had somebody to fill in anywhere whenever somebody was either hurt or injured or tired. And so that, I think, was a long way to what made Bryant a great coach. There's other things, but the same thing with Nick Saban. You know, if you're a brand name, you get the luxury of having a lot of good players, and if you can't win on a high level with more better players than everyone else has, you're maybe not that good of a coach.
Well, I mean, there's no question. The more talent you have, the better a coach you are. I think Ken Austin says that in his interview with us that we'll get a chance to run here in just a little bit. So, I mean, that's the key. The first thing is go out and get as many good players as you can.
So I know we've done a remarkable job of stepping that up here with Hugh Freeze.
No question.
I guess there's a little more work to go, though, right?
Sure. I mean, this is a team right now, because of the transfer portal and recruiting, it's a team that has a lot of seniors and a lot of really young players, first and second year players. There aren't many juniors on this team. So they're going to need another class like this, and also, you know, they're going to need to fill in with the transfer portal a little more, but another class so that you start having balance and talent in every single class.
Well, one last question. I've always been kind of a fan of Vanderbilt. It's sort of the David and Goliath thing. We just get all this excitement and inspiration out of little David and putting old big Goliath on his big
right.
butt on the ground. But, Franklin, who had some pretty good success, went off to Penn State. Do they still have the same guy who filled in for him?
Oh, no. They're on their second coach, Clark Lee, who is a Vandy grad, is there now. And, I think the over-under for Vandy wins this year is 2.5.
Yeah, it's just so. I mean, the distance, especially with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma
right.
now, I mean, the distance between the number of teams on Vanderbilt's schedule on a yearly basis. We appreciate the phone call, Yellowhammer. The number of teams that are, approximating Vanderbilt in talent and depth, that number's getting smaller,
yep.
and Vanderbilt's not going to play all of them on an SEC schedule. And so it's just, it's a really, really tough – just the path to 2-6, right,
is a tough
one, and then let alone a .500 record or better.
Mm-hmm. We have heard from Justin Ferguson, and as a matter of fact, we're about to contact him. So we will talk with him when we come back on the other side. We'll run some of the interviews when we get the chance. But Justin Ferguson from The Observer joining us when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and usually joining us here in the studio, but he's got some other things going on this afternoon, is Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Doing pretty well. Again, just really enjoying the opportunities we're getting to watch practice, talk with so many players, and then today spend time with half the assistant coaches, the offensive guys.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I mean, I've talked about it at the Observer, but the amount of information and the amount of stuff we have been able to kind of share with Auburn fans over this first week of camp is more than I've, can remember. It's a lot of practice and a lot of players. And then today, obviously, when you get all the coaches, the offensive assistants in, it's just a wealth of information about a side of the ball that, really needs to take a step forward in 2024.
We lost Justin.
Did you hear a little ping pong noise there,
yeah,
too?
I hope.
Maybe see, is that him? We'll see if he's back. All right.
Yeah, you didn't get struck by lightning or anything, did you? That was funny. We had a little thong and you were gone.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I think my house is trying to. I don't know what it's doing, but. I don't know what y'all got of that, but it's been really good just hearing, all the coaches, talk today about the offense. Because I think each of them, I don't know if you guys could kind of pick up on it like I did, but you felt like each of those guys were talking about just the improvement that needs to be made at that position. Like there's a sense of urgency there on the offensive side of the ball, and you could kind of hear it in all of them in the way they talked.
Yeah, but it didn't seem like a desperate type urgency. I mean,
no.
I also got the feeling that they're pretty pleased with the way things are coming along. There's still a ways to go, but they're on the right track.
Yeah, and this is something that, I know Dan and I have talked about a lot on our podcast, but, one of the things that sticks out to me, and to hear, Derek Nix actually say it today, one of the things that I think is interesting is when you bring all these guys back, and you don't have very many guys who were not here in the spring. You only have a handful of new transfers or freshmen you're trying to plug in on the offense. What they're able to do here in fall camp is they're not learning as much stuff. They're getting to just get better at what they need to do, right? They're actually getting to practice football instead of, okay, install. We got to get all this together in time for the season to start. And so we'll see how much of a difference that makes on the offensive side of the ball, once the season starts. But I do think that's kind of an underrated storyline here of the first week of camp, is that you're getting to hear, yeah, practice is about getting better at football, not just, hey, we need to know these plays so we can be able to run something, you know, in a few weeks. And I think that's a pretty big difference.
Things seem settled down. And I guess part of that is there's more clarity on the depth chart, far more than there was this time last year when we had so many new players and so many spots seemed pretty wide open, or there'd been a new contender joining, you know, between the end of spring practice and now. So even if you thought it was solidified coming out of spring practice, it was thrown into there. There were far more questions about what the starting lineup could look like than this year. And yeah, I mean, it seems like that's reflected in talking to all of these coaches. Like there's a different feeling around the team this fall for multiple reasons than there was going into everyone's first fall camp with Auburn.
Exactly, and I think that familiarity could go a long way. I did find something, you know, interesting. Like, it was kind of a thread that you could weave through all of the coaches that talked on Thursday. But you know, it's I think it comes from your head coach on down, and I also think it comes from your most important position, which is your quarterback. And you know, the word with Peyton Thorne continues to be, hey, this guy knows what he's doing in this offense. His head knowledge, his processing, his decision making is where it needs to be. And I think if you have an RPO heavy offense like Auburn's trying to run, so much of what you got to do is, hey, here's what the defense is doing. Here's what we're going to do pre-snap. Let's process all of this, know where we're going with the ball, or have a feeling of where we're going to go with the ball, so that when things change at the snap, you're not having to wait and react. I think Ken Austin said it best mm-hmm. today, where he was like, when you are reactive on offense instead of proactive, that's where the defense tees off on you. And that's got to be the big thing for Auburn this year. We'll see how much better Peyton Thorne is at throwing the ball. Obviously, having better receivers should help. Obviously, having continuity in running, the running back and the tight end room and the offensive line should help. But he had to get better himself, and having a full offseason in this offense seems to have gotten his head knowledge and his processing good, because that's, you know, it doesn't get talked about quite enough how that's the important part of playing quarterback.
Oh,
you heard Ken Austin talk about this with
right.
Walker
that,
White.
Ken Austin, yeah, when Ken Austin was talking about athletic ability, he was asked about Walker
yep.
White, and he said
yep.
Walker White has all the physical tools. He goes, but there's a difference in physical tools and playing quarterback. You have to learn to play the quarterback. And he'd said earlier that Peyton Thorne thinks like a defensive coordinator now. He understands exactly what he sees out there from the defense.
Yeah, and it's huge, right? You know, is Peyton Thorne the fastest quarterback in that room? No. Does he have the biggest arm? No. Is he the most accurate? Maybe not. You know, but what he's got is he's got the level of knowledge and the processing that you need to do to operate at this level, because on the other side of the ball, you've got some of the best talent in the country, and some of the best defensive minds in the entire sport are the defense coordinators in the SEC. So for Auburn to take that step forward this year, they needed Peyton Thorne to be, you know, that type of quarterback who's going to be more proactive instead of reactive. I think they were off in too much time last year where you had to come up with something out of nothing, or nothing was getting open or anything like that. So to be able to diagnose what's going on pre-snap, know where to pull the trigger, know where to go with it, I think could help him be a better player, especially in an offense. It sounds like they're going to do a lot more of the, you know, the RPO stuff and the stuff where it's about taking what the defense gives you.
How much are you expecting to see the new receivers is a loaded question, because there are seven of them. do you want to
a lot if you're talking all seven?
Well, it's a two-part question, Bill. Do you want to start with the freshmen or the veteran transfers?
Like, well, I wouldn't think it's much question how much you're going to see the veteran
a
guys.
Lot.
You're
going
to see a lot of the
three veteran
transfers.
How about the true freshman, Justin?
I think, you know, talking to Marcus Davis today, talking about Cam Coleman and Bryce Kane were ahead of Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons, a wide receiver, which just makes sense, right? You know, they had a full
spring,
15, you know, practices under their belt compared to these guys who were trying to catch up. Now, I think Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons both have physical ability that could get them on the field without necessarily being the most polished guys in the world in the offense. But Cam Coleman's ahead of schedule. Bryce Kane, my thing with Bryce Kane is not that he can't play at this level. I think he's got the speed and the talent, and being that early enrollee kind of helps. I think the thing with Bryce Kane is, if you look at the slot receiver room, he's got two guys ahead of him that, you know, played a lot of football. Maybe three if you put, you know, Caleb Burton in the slot. You know, Robert Lewis is probably going to be your starting slot. Sam Jackson is a guy that, even though he hasn't been a receiver in college, his quarterback knowledge from, you know, his days at TCU and Cal really have helped him kind of be ahead of the curve that you would expect for a guy who's kind of transitioning back to the position he hadn't played in several years. And so it's like, yes, Bryce Kane could get on the field and could make some plays. My thing with Bryce Kane is, just, are the opportunities going to be there as much? Because he's just got more competition. And we knew that kind of coming in, right? We knew that naturally it was kind of the reason why Auburn made the big transition they did in the wide receiver room is they had a lot of slotty, you know, slot speedy kind of guys. They don't really, you know, didn't really have as many bigger dudes on the outside. And that's where a Cam Coleman or a Perry Thompson could end up, you know, playing a little bit more than those guys like Simmons, like Kane. So no knock on Kane at all. I just think Cam Coleman being the talent he is, being just the best looking receiver Auburn's got right now, and playing a position that's at a premium in this room is gonna lend itself to, you know, a lot more playing time.
All right, as we talk with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the Thursday Drive, a weekend. Today, you know, no practice. We got a chance to talk to the offensive coaches. We've had opportunities to watch three or four, you know, bits of three or four practices and talk to quite a few players and coaches now. After a week, what is the headline, or what has struck you most here of the first week of fall practice for Auburn?
You know, I think to me, I keep going back to the fact that Auburn feels a lot more comfortable. There is a buzz, there is a vibe in that room that is just different than what we saw last year. What we even saw in the spring, I think, too. You know, these players, I think, are confident in the guys that are going to be leading this team. I think these coaches are confident in what they've assembled. Now, they have to get better, and this is still, on paper, a team that's not supposed to win the SEC, and they're middle of the road in the SEC right now. But, you know, it's just that confidence. You know, it doesn't seem like there are as many question marks of, like, who's going to do what, or, you know, who's going to be involved in this or that. And I think that's just allowed Auburn to kind of be in a better position just to get better as a football team, and just not have to worry about a lot of the stuff that you had to worry about last year, where you were just trying to put a team together. It looks more like and feels more like a year two, and it should. And I think we're seeing the benefits of that here at ball game.
Talk to the offensive coaches today, Justin. But I mean, I guess getting back to what could they be really evaluating closely in the scrimmage that's going to take place in the next couple of practices? What spots on the two deep, or what spots in the starting lineup, still feel like there's a battle to see who it's going to be. I mean, we've talked a little bit about the safety spot next to Bug Thompson. Bill, you mentioned maybe one or both of the D line spots.
Exactly.
Next,
well, who lines up first? I don't know. That's not to me as important as that other safety, because the other safety is going to be on the field a lot more. Defensive line, they hopefully will be able to rotate those guys and keep them all fresh.
Yeah, and I think the safety spot is really interesting, because to hear Bug Thompson, some of those guys, talk about it this week, it was like, yeah, like, somebody's going to have to start, but I think they're expecting to play both Caleb Wooden and Sylvester Smith a good bit. So having that depth, that quality depth, is going to be big. Yeah, I mean, I think it is more of a situation where if you're Auburn, you're looking for who's going to provide you that quality depth in case something goes wrong with your key starters, right? As we said, you feel pretty good about a lot of spots on this depth chart. There's obviously room to grow, but what happens if somebody gets hurt? What happens if there's a big downturn in production? Who are you going to turn to? How much of that quality depth have you been able to pick up? But yeah, that defensive line and safety, I think, to an extent, are kind of like, you know, you look at corners like J.C. Harden and Spooty Kite, like, you look at those groups and say, hey, yeah, there's going to be a starter, there's going to be a guy who gets more snaps than the other, but, like, they're, you know, I think they're going to need all of them. So it's an opportunity, I think, for guys to step up and prove that they're, you know, worthy to be counted on. And I always go back to, you know, something that Kevin Steele said when he was the defensive coordinator here. He said, you know, we want to have 20-plus starters on our defense. And I think you got to kind of have that mindset on both sides of the ball. So we can get tied up in who's going to be the starter, who's going to, you know, hear their name called out before the game and all that. Who's going to be the first one on the field. But I do think quite a few of these possessions, especially on defense, they're just going to have to lean on that depth because you don't want to overload, you know, a small number of guys.
Talking with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Do you want to, Bill, you want to let Justin plug the website and get out of here because we're keeping him from a
Yeah. Make sure you tell Kathy I said congratulations and we're really going to miss her.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess we've thought about it with Kathy Harker retiring. Like, I don't know how Auburn's athletic department's going to survive, but
well, I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing when Reba Gulledge stepped down. I said, man, whoever takes over next has got two serious pairs of shoes to fill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, does a great job, and yeah, so. You can check out the Auburn Observer. We're putting out stuff every day from Auburn on camp. Like right before I got on with you guys, I posted a new newsletter running down a lot of stuff that we learned from the position coaches. So a lot of info in there, a lot of practice info from throughout the week. And we'll be at the scrimmage, open practice, whatever you want to call it, at the stadium on Saturday. We got a new podcast that will come out tomorrow with me and Dan. So auburnreserve.com, check it out. It is the time to sign up.
All right, Justin, appreciate it. Tell everybody we miss them. We'll see them soon. So really appreciate you joining us here for a little bit on the show.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys.
All right, take care. Justin Ferguson, there's that same sound. That's what kind of phone does he have?
I don't know. Bing. Atari.
That's what it sounds like.
He's got an Atari phone, yeah.
Oh, we will get to our final break of hour number one. We'll have some audio coming up for you if we have the opportunity, but you can your calls come first, and you can join in 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
Experience and 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes of hour number one here on the Thursday Drive. Our thanks to Justin Ferguson for joining us for a few minutes there. And yes, I mean, it has been. I mentioned it yesterday with the Sandersons. Talked about it a little bit this morning with Ben Taylor on Auburn Opelika this morning. I mean, it's right now. Everybody seems, all players, coaches seem pretty upbeat about how practice is going, and that is as we've been saying though. A lot of that is because of the familiarity they have. They understand what they're doing. So many players that were learning it in the spring, just like Justin was saying, they're not installing. And that's another thing Ken Austin said. He said, at times, less is more. He said, you can do an awful lot of the same things out of different looks, but you want to know what you do best. And now is the time to be learning what they do best and getting better at what they do best.
Right. And this is the, I mean, in thinking about the differences between this fall and last fall, I mean, Auburn is just, I mean, they have been able to supplement the roster in a lot of different ways, and you have the luxury. And now it is kind of a luxury, Bill, right? Returning starters in college football, because between the NFL and the transfer portal being available to everyone all the time, twice a year, having a returning starter back is more valuable than ever before. Because it's a guy who's been through your system, and it's a guy who, and I would be curious to know, you know, with what would your number be, Bill? 14, 15 returning starters for Auburn of the that's not including special teams, where you bring back Chapman too, and you'd bring back Big Mac if he were healthy. That's but like of the 22, you're probably looking at 14, 15 returning starters maybe, and that's, I would be interested to know where that ranks in the conference.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, there are no returning starters at receiver, but you've got a lot of starters returning with your quarterback and running back and tight end and four of the offensive linemen. So, I mean, you've got most back, and then it's receivers, where everyone agrees it's an upgrade.
And you know what? Most of the best Auburn teams, especially when Auburn has had a big jump in a year, right? If you make the if you look at 03 to 04 or 09 to 10 or 12 to 13 or 16 to 17, right? You look at when Auburn has had a 1 year jump. Yes, there usually are differences, and in the instances, the ones aside from Jason, those teams all brought in new quarterbacks, but there are usually a lot of returning starters building the foundation.
A lot of returning starters, especially up front. You think about it. Auburn, when Auburn's had more guys returning from a decent offensive line, which Auburn was a decent offensive line a year ago. They were better last year than they were a year before, and they should be even.
If the four best Auburn teams of the last 20 years, Bill, are 04, 10, 13, and 17. Those are four teams that, and all four of those teams are teams that had distinct improvement from the year before. But there are also teams, like you just said, you return starters at key positions, and it can fuel a big improvement in a short amount of time.
Oh yeah. All right, we're halfway done. We've got audio galore that we can run for you in hour number two. Love for you to join in, though, as well, here on the Thursday Drive.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this eighth day. It's 8-8-24 today.
How about that?
If you like, things like that. There's one more eight missing to total 24.
But I was going
to
say, wait a minute, what's
40,
the
40? But I like it's all divisible by 2, 4, and 8. 8, 8, 24.
There should be, you know what? When it's the same day as the month, you know, like the 8th of August or the 7th of July or something.
Sure.
That should be a holiday. That should be a day where we say, you know,
sure.
no
1,
business.
1, 2, 2, 3, 3, all the way
no
through
business.
12, 12.
No I business. That day we should say, you know what, it's August day.
Yeah.
And everybody go
Double
home.
Double 8.
Or at least, you know, at least a half day. Hey, it's August day. Everybody go home at noon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm for that.
Yeah. I don't know, Bill. That's one of my, I'll put that in my platform.
All right. We're here with you, Bill and Dan, here in the studio. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joined us by phone in hour number one, and we hope you had a chance to hear that. If not, we strongly encourage you to check out, well, whether that's what you're listening to or not, but if you want to catch up on anything, check out our podcasts.
That's right. Podcast of the Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. Again, all that presented by our good friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
You can join us here on the show by calling The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on The Drive text box, also presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Bill, we got some time to run some audio. You want to run a little Ken Austin?
I thought Ken Austin was excellent today. Auburn's quarterbacks coach. Now, this is a man with so much experience. He was an outstanding quarterback at Ole Miss, then played in the CFL, was a head coach of a Canadian Football League team, has been an offensive coordinator. He was an analyst last year for Hugh Freeze, and now he is back with Hugh Freeze and Derek Nix. Those three worked together for Hugh's entire time at Ole Miss. You can go ahead and start it because it's going to take a couple of seconds. He sat down. There's some background noise and everything before. You know, coaches will sit down. You'll start your recording. And then and then we'll get some questions for Kent Austin, Auburn's quarterbacks coach today.
That's fine.
Yeah, that was he was asking Jason if he wanted to put on his mic or not, but we're about to get going with Auburn's quarterbacks coach. Ken Austin today as we talk to the Auburn offensive coach.
Do you want Drew to skip ahead? Or,
no, here
or
we here go.
What's it been like for you guys at the quarterback position? How's it been?
First of all, I think we have we've got a great room of guys. You know, they probably the best group of quarterbacks as a whole that I've coached as far as individuals. The level of preparation, their desire to be good and to study, you know, and to make sure that when they enter the field, they're well prepared to make great decisions, because that's ultimately the number one thing you have to have as a quarterback, is to be a great decision maker, and they've taken that to heart and absorbed a lot of information so far, and I think they're processing it really well.
Ken, talk about the difference in a year ago not being able to be there on the field, and now, I mean, you've got to feel, you know, much more comfortable and you know, be able to really be the guy again.
certainly have a lot of help. Coach Freeze and Jesse and Thomas, and it feels a lot better for sure. It's something I've done, you know, my whole career coaching quarterbacks, and obviously I feel very comfortable in that role, and take very seriously our responsibility, my responsibility to get that room prepared. They have to be the most prepared guy on the football field every time they take the field, and we don't have a lot of compromise in that area.
Comfort is a word we've heard people talk about Peyton. How different does he look from last year this time to now?
He has a complete command of defensive recognition, a complete command of pressures, complete command of protection. He sets all our protections for us. He is a very, very intelligent, smart quarterback. You can be intelligent and smart, but you have to have immediate recall in football in that position. You have to be able to get a play, immediately have a picture of that play, and know exactly what your rules are for execution and for the decision-making, and then being able to implement it very quickly with different defensive structures that you're facing. And he has a tremendous recall of information. You don't have to show him a lot of looks. He's not a high rep quarterback. You can show him a look one time, and he'll recall it 3-4 days later. So that's going to serve him really well this year. He's doing really, really well.
You talked about his recognition. Or he can control schemes and blocking schemes and things like that. How much of that did he do last year? How much more is he doing this year? How much more are you trusting him with making calls on the field?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, he set our protections last year, but we're going to put more on his plate in the overall control of the offense. Checking things in the run game, getting us out of a pass concept to a better pass concept. In our RPO world, being able to put our receivers in the proper RPO by changing the two receiver combo, the single receiver combo, based on defensive structure. And so all of that, the way we design it as far as preparing the quarterbacks, is as we game plan, there's a why behind everything, and there's layered learning throughout the week. So all the play designs and the rules will be attached to associated cutups, and then the practice will be structured in such a way that layers that learning throughout the week. So when he goes in the game, the probability for making great decisions, you know, increases dramatically. And Peyton will do he'll flourish in that environment. You know, that's one of the reasons why we wanted him when we first got here. He played a lot of football, has a lot of experience, and he had had quite a bit on his plate. Previous stop. So
having a quarterback that does those things, how much does that help the rest of the guys around him, because he's able to do do you see that automatically?
Yes. Yeah,
bringing everybody else
it
up?
It does. Like when the defensive front or in secondary shows a particular pressure and they're disguising it, Peyton picks it up immediately, gets us in the right protection, gets a block, and goes to completion. That's obviously going to generate confidence with the guys up front and trust that he's going to give them a chance, you know, for success, and the receivers a chance for success by delivering the ball on time and understanding when the defense is most out of position and where to go with the football in an ever-increasing, decreasing amount of time, right? You have to to be a great quarterback, we believe that you have to anticipate the game and not react to it. If you're constantly reacting to the defense, that's a win for the defense, especially at this level.
Talk about how some of the when you talk about the quarterback room, the other guys that are battling there, what have you seen? Who, you know, how have they progressed, or what do you see that they need to do?
They're all doing well at differing levels, but I think if you track where they should be and where there is some carryover from last year, there's a lot that's not a carryover. There's new terminology, new ways of attacking the defense, new requirements in the room that they didn't have in the past. We believe all of them are tracking properly, you know, in that development and knowledge of the game, and being able to be trustworthy when they go out on the field and play football for us. Competition is pretty stout right now because they're all, you know, they're all competing in a way that's healthy for the team and healthy for the room, because they're good individuals, they're good people, and they get what it means to be, you know, part of something that's bigger than themselves, but still to compete for the job that they want, but do it in the proper way. So we'll see when we get into some live periods and some scrimmages, and we'll get a better idea really of that ability to process and make great decisions and throw accurate passes when we're in a real competition period.
I know there's only so many reps to go through when you can do
right.
that. How important is it to try to maybe start to narrow things down?
Yeah,
to
we're going to. We've talked about it. It's going to have to start here at some point, probably quicker than later.
Yeah.
You can't get four guys ready. You really can only get two guys ready, and that's even marginal once you get to the season. So at some point here, we need to get a scrimmage in for sure, at least one, and we'll make an evaluation after that first scrimmage and see where guys are at. We, as you guys know, I think we talked about this before. We grade every single play that a quarterback takes. Doesn't matter what the period is, and we grade them in decision making, which is the number one thing that we look for, and then physical execution. And how they've been taught to execute that play, right, physically. And so all of those grades are being tabulated. And when we get a body of, we get enough statistically valid evidence where the plays have been evenly distributed, you know, throughout that group, we'll have a much better idea of those two areas and then overall command of the offense. But we need a scrimmage and a couple more live periods.
As a quarterback coach, how does it feel to look out there and see the receivers that you guys have now?
Yeah, well, it's like I say in my position and across the board. I mean, better players, better coaches, for sure. We will need a couple of young guys to step up and play and be productive for us. But right now it looks like that's going to be the case. And we're more talented in that room than we were last year. I can say that. We'll see if it translates to real games, but we believe it will.
As a quarterback, when you know that I have more playmaker, does it take some pressure off in terms of maybe not trying to do too much?
Yeah, it does. We've already seen it in practice. I mean, there'll be throws that our quarterbacks will make, and attempt, I guess I should say, will attempt that they probably wouldn't have attempted last year because of the trust that they have in their receiver to make those plays and to finish the play. We talk about a receiver having a big catch radius, the bigger the catch radius, the more the quarterback's gonna trust him. And also the ability to do things in time and space. I don't want to get too detailed here, but when you're facing a lot of zone coverage, I mean, man's one thing, he's got to beat your man, but in zone, you have to have the ability to understand coverage and in time and space and to know when to shave a route, to know when to throttle, to know when to run through a particular zone if needed, how we're isolating an individual defender. And they're doing a much better job of that right now than we've ever done, you know, in that room. And that's going to pay off. That to your question, I mean, that brings confidence to the quarterback in knowing, oh, if we're going to isolate an inside defender with an over and under, but we've got to shave away from the next defender pushing to him, right, to ensure the throw. We wouldn't make that throw last year.
Yeah.
You know, we're making that throw now.
Is that where narrowing down the reps, where guys can get more reps together with those guys, comes into play?
Yeah, less is more for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, just dress up what you're doing in multiple looks, you know, and but conceptually keep running, keep getting reps at the same concepts, and then just, you know, present them differently.
Could you just talk about what it's been like working with Derek?
Derek's great. I worked with him at Ole Miss when I was there as a coordinator, and he was the running back coach. Outstanding individual, great coach. I think the guys really relate to him well, and he's done a really good job of, you know, of leading our room of coaches, and it's clear that he's unselfish and just wants to win.
Yeah, and you talked about needing a little bit more time in terms of getting two quarterbacks most of the reps. Is there any separation right now between Holden and Hank? Are they doing anything different from each other? Are they kind of on the same level right now?
They're probably on the same level. I mean, if you were to hold a gun to my head and made me choose one of the two categories, you know, I'd say they're probably at the same spot. But that will separate. You know, it always does, and it's rarely a case where. You know, two guys go through the entire camp and there isn't some separation at some point. It might be the case this time, but ask me that in a couple of weeks when we have a few more live periods under our belt.
What about Walker? What have you seen him progression from the spring when he was heavy to swimming, summer to kind of settle in? Yeah, what have you seen out of him?
First of all, he's an unbelievable person. And you talk about a guy that cares. He's like the rest of the guys in the room. He is very detailed. He takes a ton of notes. He wants to know the why, sometimes too much, right? Especially at his age right now in his development. I told Walker, I said, Walker, all you need is enough information to execute the play and nothing more. I'll teach you the nuance of defense and coverage and how to defeat, you know, coverages, you know, within that concept. I'll teach you the nuance of some of that stuff later. Just get enough to execute the play and go deliver the ball, because he's really physically talented. He's big and strong. He's got a great arm. He's naturally accurate. He can get out of trouble if he needs to. But as you guys know, the physical attributes in quarterbacking only carry you so far. That's really not quarterbacking. You got to learn how to play the position, and be a real quarterback and be a real student of the game and understand defense like a defense coordinator understands it.
You talked about Peyton. What do you look for him between now and when you get into kind of game prep time? What do you look for out of him?
What we have in right now after three installations, does he have a full command and understanding of those plays across the board where we can – there's trust there in his execution of those plays. And that's done through, like I said, all the grading and the evidence on film. I'm sorry, guys. I tracked a lot of flies. it's probably not a good thing. Good quality to have. And then as we add a little bit more, right, and then we start to bring in some other operational things that he may control. We then have to evaluate that. So we have an understanding going into the season what we really want to put on this plate and what we don't want to put on this plate. The more that we can put on the quarterback's plate as far as flexibility on what we're doing on the field, where we're not letting a defense check our checks and a coordinator check our checks and these types of things, where the quarterback can control some of that, we can play faster and keep the defense more off balance. And so we've just got to make a decision and try to determine how much of that we're going to give him.
One more, I forgot. this group, you mentioned Derek, but you guys as an offensive staff are back on a page that you're all familiar with.
Yes.
How beneficial has that been already?
Yeah, it's big. I mean, we've all worked together at some point, at some stop along the way, either recent or in the past. I mean, I worked with Derek at Ole Miss when we were there with Houston. And, Derek's worked with Ben and Mo and Jake, and I've worked with Mo and Ben at Liberty, and so there's a lot of consistency there, and understand it's really good to know the quality of the individual across the board that you're with every day, right? And the quality of the individuals that we're with every day are good individuals that care and want to win and want to do right by their players, and they understand that this game is not about them. You know, it's about the players, and always has been and always will be. Those are the best coaches, and that take an unselfish approach to their service to the offensive staff, to the head coach, to this university, and also a service to their players, you know, to do whatever it takes to put them in a position to be successful.
That is Auburn quarterbacks coach Kent Austin, who, along with the other offensive assistants, met with the media today. And yes, for anyone, we were talking about this during the interview, for anyone who was thinking it's a quarterback battle, it is a battle for who is the number two guy, because as Ken Austin said, you can't prepare four. It's really difficult to prepare two, but Peyton Thorne is, I mean, he's the man. He has everything as far as the knowledge down. Now, like he said, now they've got to see it in scrimmage and carry it over to the game.
Right, and Ken Austin sounds like someone who has been spending this offseason preparing to have Peyton Thorne running his offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not to say that it couldn't be Holden or Hank or Walker, you know, through fate. But right now, it would appear that Peyton Thorne has a sizable lead, and the battle is for second. And Bill, would you say at the moment Holden appears to have an edge over Hank for second?
I think he said they're close. I mean, they're about the same place, but he said that usually doesn't continue through an entire camp, and that's even more why he wants to see some scrimmage situations to see, you know, all right, who sets themselves apart and is the number two guy in the pecking order. So, good stuff there from Kent Austin. We have plenty more audio that we can get to. Love to hear from you, though, if you've got any questions or comments. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break of hour number two here on the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from 6-7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. And again, we have all kinds of audio from players and coaches. We heard from quarterbacks coach Kent Austin. Let's move over to the other side and hear from a player. Senior defensive lineman Jason Jones spent a little time in the media as well. And he's another player who, I mean, he's battling for a starting position, but there are quite a few veterans up front. And he talked about his position and his role as an experienced player on the Auburn defense.
In the way it did, I thought maybe he'd give a scholarship probably towards the end of camp, middle of camp, but he got me good this time. It's a really good feeling, and it's a blessing. I thank God every day that I was able to get it.
Was it during like a team meeting? How did
it? Oh, it was right after a team run, so I am tired.
Well, that's actually Justin Jones, the Auburn running back who had just gotten a scholarship. I've got Jason Jones as well. That's the problem. Yeah, my bad. That was Justin Jones. We need to retitle that.
You want to run Justin? Let's run. I mean, we already.
Yeah, we might as well hear the young. Not young. I mean, he's a fourth year guy. Graduated, as a matter of fact, on Saturday. So if we got that, we'll go ahead. Just wanted to make sure you knew. It's like he's not going to be talking about the defensive lineman. He was going to be talking about him just getting a scholarship. And that's why it came Friday, because I was thinking we just talked to Jason Jones yesterday. But yeah, this is Justin Jones, who had just gotten a scholarship and was about to graduate on Saturday.
Experience, it was good though.
What did your teammates, what was their reaction?
Oh, everybody got hyped. Everybody showed a lot of love. He was had me on the back, telling me, yeah, it's about time, you owed. You deserved it, so, you know, it was amazing for me.
And this is a big weekend for you, right? Graduation tomorrow?
Yeah, graduation tomorrow. Big, big weekend. I don't think I had a big weekend like this since probably coming out of high school, announcing where I was going for football then, so.
So to be put on scholarship and to graduate all in the same week, can you put into words what that means to you?
Honestly, just dedication, like staying down and working hard, like, and having a good support system behind me and getting me where I need to be to do what I did. And I just, you know, my mom and my dad, they've been my main source of energy going through all this. So, you know, without them, I probably wouldn't have been able to make it as far as I did.
For you being an in-state guy, what has this meant to you, your journey at Auburn?
It's a dream come true. I've been an Auburn fan since I came out. And it's just seems so unreal. Even when I'm here now, it still doesn't feel as real. Like, as it seems. When I first got here and I met all these cool guys, Coach Cadillac Williams, and I got to be around all these superstar people, I was in shell shock. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I cannot believe these are my teammates, these are my coaches. It was just an amazing experience.
Do you guys keep in contact with, I don't know how much you've been able to talk to maybe Brian or his family over the past few months?
Oh, yeah. We have a group text, and we all text him and everything, and he's doing a lot better now. We're all happy to hear about him and his recovery. So.
Talk about just your approach. You got to go to work and work butt off all the time. It's going to be tough to get playing time here. Just talk about your mindset and what you're trying to get out of this, just in general.
So when I came in, I had a lot to prove. Not just to myself, but to a lot of people from my childhood, growing up. And it's always been in the back of my mind when I was told when I was younger that there's not a lot of things that a person of my stature would be able to do, especially being a tall running back. It's been a difficult journey trying to get me to move to different positions, but I stayed down and stayed true to myself. And I had a lot to prove, and I came and I did that, and I still got more to go. So.
And so that was Justin Jones. We've got Jason Jones. If we have a chance, we'll play that as well. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. You can give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Back for the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
1-1-3-9-0. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Final 20 minutes of the Thursday Drive with Bill and Dan, and we'll continue with audio as today, again, we had an opportunity to sit down with Auburn offensive assistants. We ran the quarterbacks, Coach Kent Austin, a little while ago, and Dan was among the group that were able to talk with receivers coach Marcus Davis.
Play.
Coach, it feels like the bit that we've seen of Coach Nixon, maybe what we saw in Phillip last year, they're kind of different in terms of energy. Maybe the message is the same, but they deliver it differently. And so what have you seen kind of in that aspect, just having different energy? Maybe, like I said, the guys all say Coach Nixon brings it every day. Do you see the guys kind of pick up on that?
Well, Coach Nixon, man, he awesome to be around. And for a coach like me to have somebody like him as the leader, it's good to you know, see how he bring it every day, and the players love it, the coaches love it, and you know, you could tell he's been in the SEC, you know, just with not only the receivers, but just from an offensive mind, he's done a really good job of, you know, bringing some of the things that he got knowledge of, and the guys loving it, man. So it's been awesome to be around Coach Nix and just learn from him.
How contagious is it?
Oh, it's super contagious. You know, anytime anybody got good energy, it's always contagious. And that's what we preach to the players as well. You know, just always have a positive outlook. And whenever a receiver make a play, all of a sudden you see two or three more receivers making plays. And now a running back busts a big play. So positive energy in any atmosphere is contagious.
Marcus, what's it been like to be able to plug in a guy like Dre into your so much experience, number one receiver on a really good team? What's that been like?
Yeah, man, it's been fantastic to have him in the room. He another coach. Him and Rob both. I can't say enough about those guys. They an extension of us as coaches. It means something to them, even how those guys come and sit in meeting rooms, man. They there 15 minutes early, you know, trying to find a way to get better. It means something to them. You could tell they motivated. You could tell both of those guys played a lot of football. And I think ultimately it's going to continue to help those younger guys, too, because they seeing what it looked like. And you don't have to motivate the motivated. And those guys come in with a chip on their shoulder to prove whatever.
We've seen Sam make a lot of plays in practice. What is it like coaching a guy who's having to adjust back to wide receiver, but, you know, knowing that it might take some time, but he's already, you know, making a lot of plays for y'all?
Yeah, the knowledge of the game help him just from the quarterback overall standpoint. He see the bigger picture naturally. So when it's time to sit in the zone, he kind of do that more natural than a guy that haven't been in that quarterback room. And it's awesome to have him in there because sometimes he speak up and say some things, and so it's just a good combination of guys from top to bottom as far as personality-wise and what they bring to the room, and it's been good so far.
How's your position group doing so far from a health standpoint? Are you guys relatively healthy?
Oh, yeah,
the first scrimmage?
Yeah, we're relatively healthy, and that, thank God, you know, we're going to continue to work, and that's why we're harping on making sure we get treatment, making sure we stay hydrated and doing a little things so we could be proactive from that standpoint, but everything is good.
Going back to Sam, you were a quarterback in high school. How much do you like coaching receivers who have that quarterback background? How much does it help them?
Yeah, nah, it's super helpful, man, like I said, because they see the bigger picture before it happened. It helped them with their pre-snap read. You know, we teach it in their pre-snap and post-snap reads because the defense changed. But Sam already know if a defender, if the Sam backer or the nickel backer is capped with the safety, a blitz may be coming. And he's just naturally bringing that type of knowledge to the room just off the rip of him being a quarterback and seeing the bigger picture. So all of those things are happening naturally and organic for the room, and it's been fun to see.
How helpful is it that he's known Peyton Thorne for a long time, too, and those guys have a long-standing
relationship? Yeah, that's super helpful. They play quarterback and receiver in high school, so that's instant chemistry right there. So it's good to see a guy like Sam in the building, and he's been super helpful, you know, with Peyton and getting the guys to understand Peyton, because it's way more than just football with those guys.
What are some of the most important things if a true freshman wants to contribute at wide receiver? What kind of things do they need to do?
Yeah, first off, knowing what to do, alignment, assignment, and then your fundamentals. So if I know what to do, then I know how to do it. Now I got myself a chance. So the biggest thing is being able to get lined up, knowing where to go, your assignment, knowing what to do, and then how to do it with your fundamentals. So if we could focus on those three things right there, you'll have a chance. You'll put yourself in position.
How are Perry and Malcolm doing that? They weren't able to go through spring. How are they handling that aspect?
That's always going to be a learning curve for anybody. But those guys, man, they picking it up, and they learning and growing day by day, 1% better every day.
What's the connection been like between your receivers and Peyton Thorne this fall?
It's been awesome, man, and that's a testament to Peyton. That dude is a leader. He one of the leaders on the team. Those guys following him, they believe in him, and it's a testament to the work that they put in. Like, we ain't just start fall camp. They ain't just start working with fall camp. Those guys been getting out there this entire summer, and it's good to see because, you know, all those youngins have been working hard.
Marcus, is there sort of a balancing act when you look at these highly rated freshmen of you and the staff, putting them out there and, you know, hey, they're just your freshmen at the end of the day? Or are you just saying, hey, you know, you've got that talent level, we've got these expectations for you?
Well,
you,
in any given moment, you still got to coach those guys up and put them in position to be successful too, no matter what the talent. And you know, that's where coaching come in at. But, you know, it's definitely a balance because you don't just want to put somebody in a position that they're not ready for either. So it's a balancing act on continue to evaluate them, seeing exactly where they're at, and then as coaches, putting them in the best position to be successful.
How helpful has it been? I mean, Coach Nix has experience with receivers. Even somebody like Mo Harris has experience coaching receivers. How helpful is it to have that kind of brain trust?
Man, I love it. It's been awesome, man. Even Coach Freeze, man, he coached receivers at Ole Miss, you know, when he first got in the SEC. So you got Coach Freeze, you got Coach Nix, you got Coach Heath, you know, you got Coach Mo, and you got myself. And so the knowledge that these guys have within the building, man, it's set up for those guys to succeed.
going back to Rob, I mean, you hear the guys talk about him. It's like, how the heck is this guy, you know, in his first year of playing SEC football? It seems like he belongs here. Just kind of what were the evaluations like on him? And then is he a guy that's exceeded expectation, just kind of as advertised?
Yeah, he a guy, when you watch this film and you break down his film once he entered the portal, he a guy that had the value to play both outside and inside receiver. So you know he had position flexibility. Well, when you see a guy that could do both of those things, you know he got to be a smart youngin' to be able to move around. And so all of those things checked off, you know. And then he's really good at the top of his routes. He fundamentally sound. Football means something to him. He going to do all the extra. I wouldn't be surprised if he catching jugs right now. Like, that's just the guy that Rob is, and I think that's what helped him.
Coaching the Sun Belt a little bit, and there's some Sun Belt guys on this team, Jalen, Kieron,
yep.
Rob. I mean, you guys have found some success with that league.
Yep, man. And the Sun Belt a talented league, and those kids, those young men are talented, and it's been good for us so far.
You have a lot of new receivers, but you had two come back. What have you seen from Caleb and Camden, knowing that there's a lot of hype and a lot of talk about the other guys, but you've got two there that are back?
Yeah, the main thing that we preach in the receiver room, man, we better together. It don't matter about hype. It don't matter about who came in. Everybody getting coached up. Everybody getting reps. Everybody going to support each other. Everybody going to be accountable to what the standard that we send in the room. And I think once you create that type of atmosphere, it's easier to block out the stuff it's easier to block out an expectation that's outside if the room got a standard that we set for ourselves. So we standards over expectations, you know, and I think the receiver room bind into that, and that's how you keep them together. And it don't matter who out there, we represent each other, and so we gonna compete in that way. Whether it's Caleb or whether it's Keandre, the standard is the same. We wanna compete, we wanna dominate, we wanna put the best plays on the film.
Marcus, from a recruiting perspective, what's working for you guys right now?
I think it started from the top with Coach Freeze. He an elite recruiter. I think that's point blank. And then the second part of it is you know, once you got an elite recruiter at the top and he's recruiting, it's just the standard that we set. And the thing is, we genuine in our relationships with these guys. We trying to transform them. We trying to build real relationships, and I think they see that. I think they see something special about Auburn, by how we go about our business, how consistent we are. And like I said, that part of it starts from the top in Coach Freeze.
Ben was talking about getting a full year under your belt and being able to kind of get those relationships. Do you feel the same way that now that you've been here a year?
Yep, absolutely. That always helps. And now when, you know, families come into campus and, you know, our program and our core values are set, which is family. Right, they see that, and that's how we do everything around here. Whether it's coach to coach, whether it's player to coach, whether it's coach to recruit, I think they sense the family atmosphere that is set by Coach Freeze, and I know everybody on staff is on board with that, and that's what I think is the biggest difference in how we doing everything here.
Marcus, going back to the summer, what was your pitch, the staff's pitch to a guy like Keandre, who was super highly rated, pretty much could have gone wherever he wanted in the portal?
Yeah, man, just it kind of go back to the relationship thing. We huge on relationships here, and I think ultimately that's what led Keandre to come in here. You know, I think all these youngins, man, just in the world that we're living in today, if they feel people that's accountable around them, if they feel people that are going to hold them accountable, and not only do that on the field but also off the field, I think that's what they want. And ultimately just knowing Dre and all of that, I think that's what it came down to. He felt that he could blossom. He felt that he could be himself here. And he also felt good about Peyton Thorne, and he felt good about the younger receivers that he could leave an impact on. And so I think all of those things resonated with him. And he wanted to be a leader, and he's seen a golden opportunity to come in and be that.
What do you envision the biggest difference in the offense being from this year compared to last year?
You know, just guys focusing in and honing in on, you know, what's being asked to do. And so it's been good to see guys just continue to buy into exactly what's being taught. It's good to see Coach Freeze, you know, being involved, and it's super exciting, and you can sense it from the players as well.
Bryce and Cam did get to go through spring practice? Where have you seen improvement from when they arrived to where they are right now?
Man, just knowing what to expect. They know how our tempo look. They know what the practice schedule look like. They know how to operate, and I think that's been super helpful for those guys. So now coming in the summer, you're allowed to play faster now because I already been there and done that for a semester, and so that's been super big for them.
Instead of coming in, Malcolm was winning track championships.
Yeah.
Can you tell? Like, is his track background?
Oh, yeah, you can tell. It ain't no question, man. Malcolm go 100 miles per hour every play. Some plays when you need the tempo stuff, he at top speed, you know, but it's great to have somebody like that because even if he wrong on the play, he can make it right by his effort, man. And it's a joy to coach him. Every day he come in the meeting room, he got the hugest smile on his face, man. I'm just that dude got something about him. More importantly, off the field, that's contagious, and it's been fun to coach Malcolm every
Marcus,
day.
What's it been like working with Derek Nix?
Man, awesome. You talking about a guy that had success coaching the receiver room in the SEC? I pick his brain every chance I get. I try to, you know, I ask him to be, you know, critical on me. Because I want to be great myself, and that's a guy that had success in his league doing it. So it's a blessing to have somebody like Coach Nix in the building. He hold an entire offense accountable, and it's just been awesome. I love working under him, and I done learned a ton from him so far.
What kind of off-the-field examples or reminders, I guess they'd be, of, like, Cam is really young. He was telling us in the spring, like, he still had to learn how to go grocery shopping for himself.
Yeah, I know, man. The youngest, 17 years old, he don't turn 18 until next week. But just, you know, just how coachable he is, you know, I think that's a testament to him having to gather a whole bunch of information at one time. You know, when you got an older guy, they already got a good, decent background on things, but just all the information that you're giving them, you could kind of say, wait, dang, this dude – yeah, that's only a dang five-step slant right there, Kim. But, you know, just little stuff like that. And but he's been adjusting and adapting well.
There's no stupid questions, obviously. But what's kind of like, you really just asked me that? Like, I mean,
yeah. Yeah, it's simple stuff. It's things that, you know, from coaching that would come up. But he been great. He been awesome because not only is he young, he got a great knowledge of football because he comes from a great high school program. Coach Nix did an awesome job with him and Dylan, you know, winning that state championship last year. So they come from a good background, and they're showing and it's helpful for him.
How rare is it to have a guy like Perry who's that big but also that fast? Like how impressive is that when you get to see him kind of put it all together?
Yeah, man, and he's still working, and he putting everything together, you know, grasping the playbook and everything. Sure. But it's hard to find just humans with the combination of size and speed like that. You know, 6'2", 220, and ran a 10.8 in high school. It's hard to find people like that, and so I told him, man, it's going to be fun developing him and seeing what he blossomed into as he continued to learn and grow.
We saw him working a punt return. Like, you think he can legit do that at his size?
Oh, yeah, because he talented, you know, and that's just catching the ball for him, you know. So he got to continue to work his fundamentals and clean up those things, but it's not a surprise that he's able to do that.
Marcus, what's the craziest catch you've seen Cam make in a practice?
Probably that dang picture that was on the internet. I saw that. Somebody sent it to me. That probably was the one. But he been doing that all since he been here. He just got a knack for it.
Is that a drill or a play?
Nah, that was just him making a play. Yeah.
We've seen kind of even going back to them being in like the Under Armour game together, then working out the summer. Perry and Cam have a close relationship. How would you – they're still both really young kids. How would you kind of describe their personality?
Nah, it's awesome to see those guys. Like, even Perry, you know, he hitting the ground rolling now because he wasn't here this spring. And Cam, I hear Cam tap him. I know how you feel, man. So it's just cool to see that. And you know that that's somebody that Perry can lean on just in terms of, you know, just adjusting and adapting to the playbook and the speed of practice and the speed of college and everything. So it's been awesome to see those two together, and they feed off each other energy. Not only them two, but the entire room. Everybody feeding off each other energy right now.
Do you feel like Bryce is coming along as well?
Oh, yeah.
Talked about the other three freshman receivers a little bit more. But, I mean,
Bryce, man, I'm glad to hear, man. One thing you can't coach is speed, and he definitely got that. And you could see his development from the spring to now. You could tell he was here this spring just with how he's developed and, like, just knowing what to do. So it's fun coaching Bryce. He another guy that come in with the same attitude every day, man. One thing I can say about the room right now is the approach to things is a grateful, gratitude attitude, and it's been fun so far.
I know you as the coaches aren't super involved. Obviously, it's the player-led practices in the summer, but that's what Peyton has talked a lot about. That's what a lot of the receivers have talked about. Have you kind of seen the fruits of that early in camp, all that work they did with Peyton?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You can kind of tell, and not only just from making a play or whatnot, but just how they communicate with each other. You could tell they grasping what we asking them to do. You could tell it's something that they consciously worked on, and, you know, so far you could tell the dividends in it.
Thanks, Marcus.
That is Auburn receivers coach Marcus Davis. Yeah, fun day today getting to talk to the offensive coaches. I'm sure we'll have the defensive coaches at some point in the near future. Hugh Freeze tomorrow morning. Hey, we need to get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tutto, owner of Baumhauer's Victory Grill in Auburn.